everything's gonna be. Get unlimited access to over 50 million songs. Download the Amazon Music app today.
President Trump and his family have filed a lawsuit against Deutsche Bank and Capital One to keep the banks from complying with congressional subpoenas for his business and personal records. Eric Trump, the president's son and executive vice president of the Trump Organization, tells Fox News the subpoenas have no legislative value.
They don't actually want to do their job. They don't want to fix health care. They don't want to fix immigration. They don't want to fix anything else. They just want to subpoena everybody that has, you know, ever met Trump.
People across the nation are continuing to pay their condolences to a senator who passed away on Sunday. More from USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes.
Tributes are pouring in for the former Indiana U.S. Senator Richard Lugar, who passed away on Sunday at 87. Indiana's Governor Eric Holcomb sharing some of his thoughts as he laid a wreath in Lugar's honor at a ceremony in Indianapolis.
You'd be hard-pressed to say that there was any greater political leader in Indiana history.
Lugar spent 36 years in the Senate.
And you're listening to USA Radio News.
America's built and based on liberties and freedoms. Liberty HealthShare brings that to healthcare. The liberty of choosing your own doctor. The liberty of choosing your own hospital. Liberty HealthShare makes healthcare affordable to millions of Americans. Ignite your liberty. Sharing plans starting at $199 for a single, $399 for a couple, and no matter how big the family, only $529. That's $529 for the entire family. To learn how you can save, go to lightyourliberty.com. That's lightyourliberty.com.
The Lady Bears get Whoppers and Big Macs at the White House. More from USA Radio Network's Rick Vincent.
The Baylor Lady Bears paid a visit to President Trump at the White House Monday to commemorate last month's national championship.
Coach said with tears streaming down her face on national television, God is good. He has blessed these great kids. Nice, right, Mike? Very nice. That victory was the culmination of an incredible year. The Lady Bears had a stunning 37-1 season. Wow.
It's the first women's team to visit Trump's White House. The Lady Bears, who beat Notre Dame 82-81 earlier this month, were served fast food from Wendy's, McDonald's, and Burger King in the state dining room, the same spread that other sports teams were served during their visits to the Trump White House. The team gave Trump a signed basketball, a national championship hat, and a Baylor basketball jersey emblazoned with number one.
A new survey revealed 6 million parents have at least one child under 18 with their own credit card. USA Radio Network's John Clemens has more.
The survey conducted by CreditCards.com found 21% of the parents questioned said their youngster used the plastic at least once without their permission. Despite that finding, Ted Rossman, an industry analyst with CreditCards.com, said he supports children having their own credit card.
We know that far too many people are left out of the credit system. FICO actually says 53 million Americans don't have enough data in their credit files to even generate a FICO score.
For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-wah! We're going to be discussing the Holocaust today. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thank you for joining us. Joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is co-host Air Force vet Josh Lang. What's up, Josh?
It's hard to believe that Memorial Day weekend is only 4 weeks away, Colonel. I know your calendar is usually full that weekend, paying tribute to our fallen. So check your local event calendars now to ensure you know where to be and when, so you can do the same.
Thanks, Josh. Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will join us later to share some warrant wisdom. And Marine Vet Skip Coriel here looks like he's been outside a lot. You catch a cold or something, Skip?
Actually, I did catch a cold. It's kind of frustrating because I made it through, you know, December, January, February, March, and then all of a sudden it's 70 degrees out. And I've got a cold.
Okay, life be like that.
Everybody has to learn to live with something. Here's what we have for you today. A news and comment by the Colonel. I'm going to discuss the Holocaust, a horrible activity that can only happen when a government has total control, like it does in socialism. Melissa Graves has both a PhD and a law degree. She'll discuss the reality of socialism and contrast it to freedom. Then we'll meet two ladies who lived through the Holocaust in Nazi Germany. And finally, we'll review the movie of the month with author Tom Anthony.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
Troops, as you know, on each show we honor a deceased military person. Not the superstars, but the average soldier, sailor, marine, airman, or coastie. They don't have to have served in combat, but they do have to have served honorably on active duty, guard, or reserves. Folks, I am now out of Veterans to Honor. To nominate someone, sent me about 250 words summarizing his or her service that I'll read on the show. I really need your input. Send the information to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. We welcome your input to the show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or do it on Facebook. And now it's time for news and comment by the Colonel on Frontlines of Freedom. First, the news. Lead out, Josh.
On Major General David Furniss's last combat deployment to Afghanistan as commander of a Marines regimental combat team in 2010, the unit sustained 31 casualties. 19 of those, he says, were the fault of the Marine either doing something he was told not to do and trained not to do, or not doing something he was trained to do. Now, the commander of 2nd Marine Division, Furniss appears as a guest on the internet-based All Marine Radio to discuss a controversial new policy letter he wrote in an effort to curtail a trend he observed of sloppy, undisciplined Marines in the division. The letter instituted a basic daily routine, requiring all Marines to begin their days with reveille at 5:30 a.m., and observe two daily formations and regimented cleaning and hygiene times. For those who wouldn't comply, Furniss's message was clear: shape up or ship out. Furniss wrote, quote, "There are weeds growing around our buildings and workspaces, and trash everywhere but the dumpsters where it belongs. These are just a few examples of the lack of discipline seen across the board that will not be tolerated in this division any longer," end quote. During his interview, Furniss added more detail to the new policy. He said that Marines in his division would observe an upcoming leadership and discipline stand-down on June 3rd through the 7th, in which he'd address all sergeants, senior non-commissioned officers, and lieutenants directly. He said the stand-down would also include a division-wide field day, or cleaning period, and a quarters inspection by leadership. Furniss said, "It's not chicken stuff. It's all about combat performance. You can keep yourself and your teammate and your unit alive. We will do this. You will clean your room. We will have people walk through your room to make sure you've done it right. And for those who can't do it," he added, "I'll get you orders somewhere else."
In my humble opinion, the good general is right. Sloppiness is very much a part of our culture today, and that does lead to death on the battlefield.
The U.S. Naval Fleet of the future may one day include submarines that prowl the depths of the ocean without a sailor from bow to stern, navigating mine-infested waters to gather intelligence or even clandestinely drop explosives. The military views autonomous vehicles as a way to accomplish missions deemed too risky, mundane, or expensive for human crews. While aerial drones have largely been tasked with these types of duties for more than a decade, the Navy is now increasingly funding robotic ships and undersea drones to complement the work done by its crewed vessels. Last month, Boeing Company received a $46.7 million Navy contract modification to build an Orca undersea drone. Boeing had previously won a contract to build four of the Orca drones. The drones are expected to be completed by 2022. Neither Boeing nor the Navy have disclosed the size of the robot submarines, but Boeing has previously developed and tested a 51-long-foot underwater drone prototype called the Echo Voyager. Analysts say the contract, along with the Navy's new fiscal year 2020 funding request for further development of uncrewed surface vessels and undersea drones, indicates a new level of commitment to autonomous sea operations. Brian Clark, senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments think tank in Washington, D.C., said, quote, "What it shows is that the Navy is willing to start putting some real money behind the acquisition of unmanned undersea vehicles. This is the first time the Navy has put significant money down on unmanned underwater vehicles that have a military warfighting capability." End quote.
This makes real sense to me. If drones work in the air and on land, why not under the sea?
Turkish Foreign Minister Cavusoglu said that the U.S. did not respond to Turkey's offer to establish a joint commission to check the S-400 anti-aircraft missile systems. In his words, the U.S. must understand that Turkey is in dire need of defending its airspace. The minister noted, quote, "The Russian S-400 anti-aircraft missile systems do not pose a threat to NATO and the U.S., end quote. On April 11th, Cavusoglu said that specialists from the U.S. and NATO could come to Turkey to make sure that the Russian S-400 air defense systems do not pose a threat to NATO. He said, quote, "Although the U.S. urges Turkey to abandon the purchase of Russian S-400 air defense missile systems, it does not guarantee that it will sell us Patriot air defense systems," end quote. As Secretary of State Mike Pompeo announced earlier, "We believe that Turkey will not be able to have both American F-35 fighter bombers and Russian S-400 anti-aircraft missile systems at the same time, as this is technically impossible. According to Pentagon sources, it's not possible to launch the F-35 in the space where the S-400 is operated." Turkish President Erdogan noted that despite appeals from the U.S., Turkey will not abandon the purchase of the S-400. Quote, "This issue has been already resolved by Turkey," end quote.
They plan to attack the Kurds, the only effective fighters against ISIS. Turkey is totally untrustworthy.
Iran's lawmakers overwhelmingly approved a bill labeling U.S. forces in the Middle East as terrorists, a day after the U.S. terrorism designation for Iran's Revolutionary Guard formally took effect, according to state TV. Defense Minister General Hatami introduced the bill authorizing the government to act firmly in response to terrorist actions by U.S. forces. It demands authorities use legal, political, and diplomatic measures to neutralize the American move, without elaborating. The Revolutionary Guard has forces and wields influence in Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, and Yemen, and is in charge of Iranian missiles that have U.S. bases in their range. The Guard's designation, the first ever for an entire division of another government, adds another layer of sanctions to the powerful paramilitary force and makes it a crime under U.S. jurisdiction to provide it with material support.
All I can say is that the Iranian Revolutionary Guard is certainly a terrorist force by any definition. And that's the news. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Front Lines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel and we'll enjoy some warrant wisdom. Then we'll talk about socialism with Dr. Melissa Graves. At East Troops, take a break. In accordance with the U.S. Flag Code, all Spartan Nash retail stores collect customers' old, worn, faded, or frayed American flags. In partnership with local veterans groups, we properly retire the flags we collect, a program we have offered since Veterans Day 2015.
It's part of Spartan Nash's commitment to patriotism and to serving our military heroes and their families. To find a store near you, visit SpartanNash.com.
This is Marine Vet Skip Coriel with your Home Defense Tip of the Week. According to the FBI, 85% of altercations don't rise to the level of deadly force. Make sure you have some open-handed self-defense skills or pepper gel to ward off these less-than-lethal attacks. Always have a plan to repel non-lethal attackers and make sure you are in compliance with all self-defense laws in your jurisdiction. This is just one way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit HomeDefenseShow.com.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or more importantly, if you sign up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare, and MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program It's been around for 25 years. They have more than 400,000 members now around the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $2 billion of each other's medical bills, so they could help share your needs too. And best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is around $500 a month. Your savings could be more or less, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. So if you think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have much to offer, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. There's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. 855-90-BIBLE. That's 855-90-BIBLE. 855-90-BIBLE.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Honoring Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. It's 20 minutes after the hour, and you are in formation and listening to Frontlines of Freedom all across America. A Frontlines of Freedom salute to one of our show's sponsors, honor, and remember. Our nation must never forget those who paid the ultimate sacrifice for our freedoms. This is the mission of Honor and Remember, a nonprofit based in Virginia, with support from their national sponsor, Spartan Nash, the leading distributor to U.S. commissaries and fifth largest food distributor. Learn more about how you continue the mission at honorandremember.org. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. Troops, this coming Thursday, May 2nd, is Holocaust Memorial Day. Its goal is to help us to never forget the horrible acts of torture and murder conducted against the Jews by the German Nazi regime. Yet, studies show that a significant number of Americans don't really think it happened. This is an indictment of our culture and especially our education system. Well, my mother's family are German Jews, and earlier this year my son and I visited the Dachau concentration camp in Germany. It's real. Indeed, the German government and the people there don't hide their guilt. There are Holocaust museums across Germany. All this was able to happen because the German government, a socialist state, had total control over the people. Okay, the Holocaust was a genocide during World War II in which Nazi Germany systematically murdered some 6 million European Jews, about two-thirds of the Jewish population of Europe, between 1941 and 1945. Jews were targeted for extermination as a part of a larger event in which Germany and its collaborators persecuted and murdered other groups, including Slavs, Gypsies, incurably sick, political and religious dissenters, such as communists and Jehovah's Witnesses, and gay men. Taking into account all the victims of Nazi persecution, the death toll rises to over 17 million. Germany implemented the persecution of the Jews in stages. Following Adolf Hitler's appointment as German Chancellor in January 1933, the regime built a network of concentration camps for political opponents and those deemed undesirable, starting with Dachau in 1933. The government began isolating Jews from civil society, which included a boycott of Jewish businesses in April, and on the 9th and 10th of November 1938, during Kristallnacht, the Night of the Broken Glass, Jewish businesses and other buildings were ransacked, smashed, or set on fire throughout Germany and Austria. After Germany invaded Poland in September 1939, beginning World War II, the regime set up ghettos to segregate Jews, and eventually thousands of camps and other detention sites were established across German-occupied Europe. As German forces captured territories, all anti-Jewish measures were radicalized. Under the coordination of the SS, killings were committed across territories controlled by the Axis powers. Paramilitary death squads, called Einsatzgruppen, in cooperation with German police and local collaborators, murdered about 1.3 million Jews in mass shootings between 1941 and 1945. By mid-1942, victims were being deported from the ghettos in sealed freight trains to extermination camps where, if they survived the journey, they were killed in gas chambers. The killing continued until the end of the war in Europe in May of 1945. Anyone with three or four Jewish grandparents was exterminated. Bureaucrats identified who was a Jew, confiscated property, and scheduled trains to deport them. Companies fired Jews and later used them as slave labor. Universities dismissed Jewish faculty and students. German pharmaceutical companies tested drugs on camp prisoners. Other companies built the crematoria. As prisoners entered the death camps, they were ordered to surrender all their personal property, and through a concealed account, the German National Bank helped launder valuables stolen from their victims. The industrialization and scale of the murder was unprecedented. Killings were systematically conducted in virtually all the areas of occupied Europe, over 20 countries. Close to 3 million Jews in occupied Poland, and we don't know, between 700,000 and 2.5 million Jews in the Soviet Union were killed. Hundreds of thousands more died in the rest of Europe. Germans set up 6 extermination camps just in Poland. The Wannsee Conference in January 1942 made it clear that the German final solution for the Jewish question was intended eventually to include Britain and all the neutral states in Europe, including Ireland, Switzerland, Turkey, Sweden, Portugal, and Spain. Some Christian churches tried to defend the Jews by declaring that converted Jews were part of the flock, but then they only did that to a certain point. Otherwise, not one social group, not one religious community, not one scholarly institution or professional association in Germany or throughout Europe declared its solidarity with the Jews. Medical experiments were conducted on camp inmates by the SS, and they were another distinctive feature of the SS. At least 7,000 prisoners were subjected to experiments. Most died as a result, either during the experiment or later. 23 medical personnel were charged after the war with crimes against humanity. They included the head of the German Red Cross, tenured professors, clinic directors, and biomedical researchers. Some dealt with sterilization of men and women, the treatment of war wounds, ways to counteract chemical weapons, research into new vaccines and drugs, and survival under harsh conditions. The most notorious physician was Joseph Mengele, an SS officer who became the Auschwitz camp doctor on 30 May 1943. Interested in genetics and keen to experiment on twins, he would pick out subjects from the new arrivals. They would be measured, killed, and dissected. Mengele's experiments included placing subjects in pressure chambers, testing drugs on them, freezing them, attempting to change their eye color by injecting chemicals into the children's eyes, and amputations and other surgeries. I could go on, but I won't. But this did happen. Indeed, in the next hour, we're going to talk with two ladies who lived through the Holocaust. We must ensure it will not happen again. We must never give any government the power that could let them do this under any circumstances. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom, and now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have this week, Roland?
Well, Colonel, it looks like the Coast Guard is finally going to get that much-needed new polar icebreaker. The Coast Guard has contracted with VT Halter Marine in Mississippi to build the first of three ships at a cost of $746 million apiece. This will be the Coast Guard's first new heavy icebreaker in more than 40 years. The Coast Guard has pleaded with Congress since at least 2005 for one or more heavy icebreakers, as its two heavy icebreakers were past the end of their 30-year expected service life. Well, like 15 years ago, we're past the 30 years. In 2005, the Coast Guard decided to place the 399-foot Polar Star in, quote, caretaker status, preserving it for future use, but rendering it inoperable without a major overhaul. In 2010, the Polar Star, the sister ship, suffered a catastrophic engine failure and was placed in inactive status. In 2013, the Coast Guard finally received money to be able to repair the Polar Star and is now using parts from the Polar Sea to keep it running. The service also operates the medium icebreaker Healy, commissioned in 2000 and used for Arctic patrols and research missions. It's also used to do some small icebreaking and buoy tender duties in the island waterways. These new polar security cutters will be designed to perform the mission of the Polar Star, which includes supporting U.S. scientific operations in Antarctica, as well as search and rescue, maritime law enforcement, environmental response, and national defense. Coast Guard Commandant Schultz says that the new polar security cutters are key to the nation's presence in the polar regions. The strategy places the service at the forefront in keeping the region conflict-free, with the Coast Guard patrols projecting U.S. presence, protecting maritime environment, and safeguarding mariners in the region. I personally don't understand why this has taken so long to get approved. Basically, we are currently running two operational icebreakers, with one of them well past its service life. To compare, Russia has 40 icebreakers, including two that are operationally nuclear-powered icebreakers, along with 16 other medium-sized ships in the polar region. The Kremlin has even unveiled plans to develop two new icebreakers armed with cruise missiles, and they're planning on having them enter the service in the next 2 years. I'm guessing that's why these new security cutters are also being designed with the ability to carry heavy weapons, such as cruise missiles. It's going to be an interesting time in the polar region. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Foreign Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Thank you, Roland. Dude, I really appreciate you. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss socialism with Dr. Melissa Graves. Then we'll meet two ladies who are Holocaust survivors. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. You're standing tall with the Frontlines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for planks. Let's do 3 minutes each, do 10 of them, then stand at ease.
HelpVet.net was created to be the nation's number one resource center for all veterans, active military, and families. At HelpVet.net, you'll find up-to-date information on benefits available through the VA, resources on education, employment, health and wellness, and more. Find hundreds of nationally recognized organizations offering discounts on products and services, as well as local organizations from attorneys to yoga studios. You'll find them at HelpVet.net. Visit HelpVet.net for all your family's needs.
Exercise is hard. So is maintaining a healthy diet. Of course, neither is half as hard as dying. Type 2 diabetes, heart disease, and stroke kill nearly a million people a year. But most of these deaths are preventable with regular activity, a healthier diet, and not smoking. Talk to your doctor about your risk for type 2 diabetes and heart disease. You can stop it starting right now. Get moving. Visit checkupamerica.org or call 1-800-DIABETES. A message from the American Diabetes Association.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Democrats striking an optimistic tone after meeting with President Trump regarding infrastructure.
And it was a very constructive meeting. It's clear that both the White House and all of us want to get something done on infrastructure in a big and bold way. And there was goodwill in this meeting, and that was different than some of the other meetings that we've had, which is a very good thing.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says the U.S. fully supports the people of Venezuela in their quest for freedom. In a tweet today, Pompeo says he supports opposition leader Juan Guaido and urges the Venezuelan people and military to oust President Nicolas Maduro. Republican Senator from Florida Rick Scott also says,
We have got to do everything we can, whether it's we got to use our military to get humanitarian aid in, but today, just, you know, I pray to God that Juan Guaido is the interim leader, or is the leader at the end of the day, and Maduro is living someplace else.
This is USA Radio News.
There's no question you need omega-3s. But which form should you take? Fish oil or krill oil? Scientists have debated this for years. Luckily, there's a new solution to satisfy everyone. It's called Krill Omega 50 Plus. It combines ultra-pure fish oil and joint-soothing krill oil together in just one tiny pill. It's so powerful, it can promote the health of your heart and your arteries. And if that wasn't enough, it can also boost your joint comfort in just days. We're so sure Krill Omega 50 Plus will work for you, we'll even send you a free bottle to put to the test. The debate is over. It's not fish oil or krill oil. It's both. And now it's free. Just pay $4.95 for shipping and claim your free bottle. Call now. 1-800-399-6392. 1-800-399-6392. That's 1-800-399-6392.
Troops, welcome back to the nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's an honor to welcome to the show Dr. Melissa Graves. Dr. Graves has both a Ph.D. and a J.D. and is on the faculty at the Citadel, the Military College of South Carolina. I've asked her to join us to discuss a very hot topic in our nation today, socialism. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom, Dr. Graves.
Thank you so much for having me, Denny.
Melissa, tell us your story. How did you end up on the faculty at the Citadel? How'd you grow up? What did you study? How'd you end up where you are?
Yeah, so I'm originally from Fort Worth, Texas. Come from a long line of Texans. And I had plans to be a lawyer and actually went to law school at University of Mississippi. And after finishing law school, realized the law wasn't really my thing, so I ended up going back to school to pursue a PhD in history, also at University of Mississippi. And while I was there, I worked full-time for the university, setting up an intelligence program for them alongside some other faculty members, and just sort of fell into my place, realized that I really loved working in intelligence studies. And so I was just sort of in the right place at the right time and was able to focus my dissertation on the FBI and intelligence issues. And that's sort of how I've ended up where I am today.
That makes sense. You know, I've often said, I've taught college for a number of years, that one of the purposes for education is to find out what you don't want to do. Better to find out before you get involved in it as a career when you find out in college that that's not really what you want to spend your life doing.
So, that's absolutely right.
Okay, socialism. Here's the Merriam-Webster dictionary definition. One, any of various economic and political theories advocating the collective or governmental ownership and administration of the means of production and distribution of goods. Two, a system of society or group living in which there is no private property, or a system or condition of society in which the means of production are owned and controlled by the state. And finally, three, a stage of society in Marxist theory transitional between capitalism and communism and distinguished by an unequal distribution of goods and pay according to work done. So that's what Merriam-Webster says socialism is. And it sounds to me like government control of life, sort of the opposite of freedom. You know, I know a number of today's youth think socialism is the use of social media, and I suspect that very few people really understand it. So, Melissa, help us understand what socialism is and what a socialist society might be like.
Sure. So I think you're exactly right about the fact that a lot of people today don't really understand socialism, and socialism has become kind of a hot topic word in the last few years. And I think what a lot of people don't remember or maybe know in the first place is that socialism has a long history. Even though it's become kind of a hot topic in the last few years, the U.S. has been dealing with socialism for over a century. And so I think there's a lot of historical context that's missing. But in terms of, you know, sort of the understanding, I would say that when we're talking socialism, that word means different things to different people. And so I like that you started with a definition, because I think we need to be clear about what it is that we're talking about. And that's made complicated by the fact that, you know, I think even people that are saying, well, I am pro-socialist or I'm anti-socialist may not be talking about the same things. And part of that is complicated by the fact that, you know, we have a lot of different countries throughout the world that have some form of socialist government, and it can look different depending on where we're talking about. And I think that's another thing that's sort of confusing the issue today. If we're talking about socialism in Venezuela, that looks very different than socialism in Norway. And so that can make it kind of complicated to talk about socialism in sort of an umbrella way.
You know, I agree with you, because you can have socialist aspects in a society. For example, Social Security is a socialist aspect
right. In
our country, which is, we're not a socialist society, but we have some socialist ideas, concepts, tools that we've incorporated. So it's different than socialism, where it's the total government control of things. Norway, I think, if you talk to Norwegians, they'll say, no, we're not a socialist state, but we have a lot of socialist economic principles.
Right. I think you're exactly right. There is sort of a perception, and there's a lot to untangle here with what you just said. There's a perception, I think, among people in the Democratic Party, you know, with Bernie Sanders, with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, that, you know, socialism is sort of the new buzzword, right? But what do we mean by that? Are we talking about, do you want a socialist society like the one that we're seeing in Venezuela right now? Are you talking about socialism in these third world countries or developing countries where the living conditions are not great? Or are we talking about something else? Are we talking about what we're seeing in Scandinavian countries like Norway, Finland, Sweden, Denmark, where you don't have a true socialist society? You have more of a democratic socialist society where, you know, consumer goods are still regulated by a capitalist economy, but you do have a lot of social programs that are, you know, taking care of citizens, such as universal health care, free education, and maybe even support with housing and things like that. So it's, you know, it's complicated when we talk about socialism. It's first off, what are we really talking about? When you say socialism, you're for socialism or you're against socialism, what do you mean when you say socialism? I think is an important place to start. The other thing that I am struck by with the discussion of socialism is I think, you know, we live in a very post-Cold War society, and we have, you know, a lot of people that remember going through the Cold War, right? And it was the U.S. versus Russia. And we could have a whole nother conversation about, you know, how people confuse communism and socialism. But I think a lot of people, when they think socialism, they think communist Russia. And so we sort of take for granted today in 2019 that democracy is, you know, that's what we as Americans pretty much agree on. History has shown that that hasn't always been the case. And the moments in U.S. history where socialism became a buzzword, where socialism was on the table, happened in times of great upheaval. And so, you know, at the height of the Industrial Revolution, at the end of the 19th century, the beginning of the 20th century, you saw the whole world kind of grappling with the changes that the Industrial Revolution had wrought. And you saw that play out in Russia with the Communist Revolution. You saw that play out in Germany and in Italy with a turn towards fascism. And there are some historians that have done some fascinating work. Ira Katznelson wrote a book several years ago called Fear Itself. And this book was really jarring to me because he paints this portrait of FDR as this president that was grappling with American people at a time when the Great Depression had, you know, really made life difficult for a lot of people. And it was a time when people were actually, like, seriously saying, you know, maybe capitalist society, democracy isn't the way that we want to go. We're seeing these fascist alternatives in Europe. We're seeing these communist alternatives in Europe. Maybe those are better solutions to the problems that we're facing. And as a part of that, we sort of see the New Deal come out of that where, you know, FDR is saying, okay, well, if we don't take care of people, then we may have a sizable portion of the population that wants to see the U.S. go socialist. So we have to provide some better social services so that we can sort of keep the status quo. The other time that we sort of see socialism as sort of the rage politically happened, you know, in the early 20th century when the Socialist Party ran a presidential candidate, Eugene Debs. And again, that was in response to the fact that, you know, the Industrial Revolution had happened, people had left the farms, moved to the cities. They, in a lot of cases, had some pretty bad work conditions. They were working a lot of hours. They weren't making a lot of money. The work conditions were unsafe. They were employing children. And society was really grappling with, you know, how can we have a form of government that protects our needs? And I think it's worth noting, you know, that today we're sort of, we're in the midst of the information revolution, which in many ways is going to alter society as much as the Industrial Revolution did. Nope. And so, you know, that we're seeing the same sort of societal unrest.
Okay, well, there's a lot more to talk about socialism, and Dr. Graves is going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it is push-up time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do every day. We'll take a break, but stay in the area. We'll be right back.
Now is the time, and wherever you are is the place. The Citadel makes it easier to earn your degree by offering master's degrees, graduate certificates, and undergraduate degree completion programs that are entirely online. These programs are convenient for working professionals and those serving in the U.S. military. Continuing the Citadel's legacy of academic excellence, classes are held to the same high standards that consistently name the Citadel the number one master's-granting public college in the South. The Citadel. Online. On your time. Visit citadel.edu/online.
For nearly 2,000 severely injured veterans, everyday life has become filled with barriers. So we build specially adapted homes at Homes for Our Troops. And thanks to our donors and supporters, this life-changing gift of freedom is provided mortgage-free to these veterans. but we need you to join us too in completing this important mission. Please visit HFOTUSA.org and help build homes and rebuild lives.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Front Lines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Dr. Melissa Graves from the Citadel about socialism. So one aspect of socialism, if you're talking about pure socialism, as I understand it, Melissa, is everybody gets the same thing. If you have a family of four, you get so much. If I have a family of two, I get half that. It has nothing to do with my productivity. I am expected to produce, and it's from each according to his ability, to each according to his need, which means if I'm a drug dealer who stays happy and in the hospital and non-productive, I get the same income, I get the same free medical care. This is an extreme, of course, but one way to look at issues is to look at extremes, I think. Is my assumption of what socialism at its extreme looks like?
Yes, yes. I think you're correct that if we're talking about socialism at its extreme, what you said, it's each takes as much as they need. And so, yes, it is not, it's basically tied to needs and not worker productivity. So there's really no drive. I mean, one of the big criticisms against socialism is that capitalism is successful because it rewards individual contribution and individual merit. And so it allows that competitive edge to thrive, which is what creates the Jeff Bezos, the Mark Zuckerbergs, the Bill Gates of the world, because they had the situation where you could be competitive and you could be as successful as you could possibly imagine. And with socialism, that's not going to be the case. In a true socialist society, that's not going to happen.
I've always felt that freedom is sort of bathed in responsibility. If you're free to make your own choices, you are responsible for the results. In socialism, that repeals the responsibility because everybody gets the same thing. And that tends to knock out initiative and that sort of thing. Because if I'm going to make the same amount of money regardless of what I do, and if I make some bad choices, the state's going to be there to help me along. If I decide to become a drug dealer or whatever, the state's going to be there to keep me happy. So therefore, there's no need for me to put out. That is, anytime something's automatically going to be provided, there's no motivation to do more than that, and that tends to drive away initiative. And that's my concern about socialism. And in one respect, it's sort of letting the camel get his nose under the tent. We have to be darn careful here. Am I overly concerned?
I don't think so. I think you're right to be concerned. And I have a lot of thoughts about the fact that we're even talking about socialism again, which, several years ago I would have said, no, that's pretty bogus. That's not going to be something that's taken seriously. I do think overall there is a lack of understanding among the general population of just what socialism is. A true socialist society, I mean, history has shown that those end pretty terribly for people. And a good example of that right now is Venezuela, where the conditions are so bad that people don't have clean water or food. They're literally starving to death. So if we're talking about straight socialism, I think there are so many instances from history where we can look at that and say this did not turn out well for people on a lot of different levels. When people talk about socialism as something that maybe we want to emulate, and when you see talk about this in the Democratic Party, a lot of times they're pointing fingers at Scandinavian countries. And it's true that countries like Norway, Sweden, Finland, Denmark have sort of hybrid socialist societies. And, you know, there's debate among people about, well, A, even if we wanted to have something like that in the U.S., is that even possible? Because we're talking about much smaller countries. We're talking about countries that aren't nearly as diverse as the U.S. is. Could we just take that model and just slap it on the U.S.? And that's a big debate among scholars and among economists. The other thing that's interesting to note about Scandinavia is there's debate over whether those countries are so successful today. And they are successful in terms of several metrics. I mean, they're successful in terms of productivity. They're successful in terms of living conditions. They have really great educational systems. But there's debate, actually, over whether they're successful because of these hybrid socialist models that they've adopted, meaning we're talking about if you live in those countries, you're going to have universal health care, you're going to have free education, you might have help with, you know, paying for your housing, things like that. But, you know, even the people that study those places are saying, are they successful because they offer those things, or are they successful because consumer goods are still left in the hands of the market? And so even with those countries, it's a little complex and not entirely clear as to where their success is coming from.
Good point. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom, and we're talking socialism with Dr. Melissa Graves. Melissa, one other thing about those countries is they're very racially homogeneous.
Yeah.
And that is a very big part of who they are, and we aren't.
We are definitely, in a lot of ways, much different from the countries in Scandinavia. And I mean, our history is quite a bit different. I think what we should all be taking seriously is when we see people in the Democratic Party or candidates in the Democratic Party talking about socialism, well, let's dig into that. Why are you mentioning this word and what are you wanting? And, you know, just in preparing for today's talk and looking at different candidates, I mean, there are platforms that people are running on where they're looking at things like offering free or subsidized education, where they're looking at offering free health care. And we have real issues in this country where, you know, people can't afford tuition or they can't afford medical bills. Those are real problems. And so in some ways, I think maybe using the term socialism makes it impossible for us to have a real conversation about some issues that need help. I think people on both sides of the political spectrum will say there are problems here. And I think in a lot of ways, just dropping the term socialism into the conversation is for a lot of people a non-starter.
Melissa, that's a really fine point. And we sort of need to wrap it up here. Do you want to take a minute and just summarize what two or three key points you'd like our listeners to take away from our conversation today?
Yeah, absolutely. I would just encourage people, as we're moving into election season, and I don't think the term socialism is going to go away, I would just encourage people to really educate themselves, to know what you mean by the term socialism, to not talk broadly, but talk specifics. Are you talking about a straight socialist country like Venezuela? Are you talking about sort of a hybrid model like Scandinavian countries? And then to realize that at the end of the day, let's not confuse our real issues by, you know, giving them terms like socialism that maybe are just going to be a non-starter for a conversation anyways. Let's tackle the issues themselves and maybe start there instead of getting wrapped up in different terms.
Melissa, that's awesome. That really is the issue. If we can use the same language when we're talking, we can actually make progress. If we don't, all we're doing is getting emotional. Thank you, Melissa, for taking the time to join us today. And thank you for contributing to real education to our nation. Our nation desperately needs to think before talking. Thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much, Jenny.
Well, here's our Stand Tall Troop report. This is when we find an outstanding performance of duty and we get to honor this fine troop. A Coast Guard officer driving home dove into a chilly roadside canal this month to save a woman as her car filled with water. The 29-year-old woman lost control of her car and drove into a 5-foot deep canal along Poniers Road near Murdoch, North Carolina, according to a release from the Kuertik County Fire and Emergency Medical Services. The car floated to the opposite side of the canal and began to sink. The woman climbed out through the sunroof but couldn't swim and panicked, the release said. Chief Warrant Officer Jeff Brundage spotted her as he was driving by, stopped his vehicle, and dove into the dark 50-degree water to save the woman. First responders arrived moments later, and the driver was not injured. The Kuertik Sheriff's Office is investigating the accident. Kuertik County is extremely fortunate to have citizens as brave as Chief Warrant Officer Brundage living in our community. Tim Riley, the Deputy Chief of the Kuertik Fire and Emergency Medical Services, said in the release. So, stand tall, Chief Warrant Officer Brundage, Front Lines of Freedom, and all of our nation's patriots. Salute you. This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour talking with two ladies who survived the Holocaust. Then we'll review the movie of the month. Of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our Armed America report. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. Troops, it's time to run. Run a couple of miles of wind sprints, then grab some protein, rehydrate with water. Finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.
I got to Bethesda within 48 hours of being hit. I just remember telling them to hurry.
Having family at my bedside was the biggest benefit in my healing process.
If it wasn't for Hero Miles or the Fisher House, I don't know how I would have been able to be there for Anson without struggling.
Fisher House stepped up big time to make it to where I could see my family, they could see me. It was the whole reason I made it.
To learn more about donating Hero Miles, go to fisherhouse.org.
A perfect day to fish. It's cold but sunny. Let's try the north side of the lake first. Ready?
Almost. Life jacket on?
No, I'll be fine.
Water temp is about 40 degrees. It only takes 1 minute for cold water shock.
But I can swim.
You should always wear a life jacket when boating.
Okay, I'll wear it.
Good. Let's catch some fish to take home to our families.
I bet I'll catch more.
I bet you don't.
Be ready for the unexpected. Wear it. This message brought to you by the National Safe Boating Council. Learn more at safeboatingcampaign.com.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, Hunterdon Chamber Radio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says Democrats and President Trump had a very productive meeting on infrastructure.
It's about jobs, jobs, jobs. It's about promoting commerce. It's about clean air, clean water. It's a quality of life issue, getting people out of their cars, not being on the road so much.
Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer also called the meeting very constructive and said the president agreed that they need to spend roughly $2 trillion on infrastructure. As the House Rules Committee holds its first ever hearing on the Medicare for All plan, Louisiana Republican Congressman Steve Scalise says he doesn't want to take away more choices from people.
We want to protect people with pre-existing conditions while focus on lowering premiums, giving families more choices. Let families choose which doctor they want to see and which plan they want to buy for their family, not some unelected bureaucrat in Washington.
And you're listening to USA Radio News.
With Amazon Music, a voice is all you need.
Won't you stop your crying? I know that you're trying. Everything's gonna be okay.
Alexa, play Maren Morris.
Okay.
Get unlimited access to over 50 million songs. Download the Amazon Music app today.
Flip your space with a beautiful new floor from Lumber Liquidators. This week, get easy-to-install laminate in best-selling styles like Tobacco Road Acacia and Antique Farmhouse Hickory 20% off. Or get the exotic look of Silverstone Bamboo for 20% off. Don't want a DIY? We can arrange the installation for you. Plus, get special financing so you can get started today. Sale ends Tuesday at Lumber Liquidators. Beautiful floors for less.
A storm track will cause rain and severe thunderstorms with an elevated risk of flooding extending in the southern plains to the Midwest this week. AccuWeather's Joel Lundberg also says,
yeah, at this time of the year, when you see a lot of warmth and growing humidity, you have to look for around the rim of it for these disturbances to come along and the potential for some severe weather. And indeed, that's going to be the case. It looks like Texas up into portions of Missouri will probably be the area that we'll be watching most notably. And
Lundberg says the best time for those isolated storms will be Tuesday afternoon into Tuesday night. Former Vice President Joe Biden has surged in polls since launching his bid for the Democratic presidential nomination, opening up a double-digit lead over the rest of the field in two new surveys. A new CNN poll found that Biden has a 24-point lead over Senator Bernie Sanders. No other candidate in the race has double-digit backing from respondents. And you're listening to USA Radio News. This is USA Radio News.
The best sleep of my life has been since I got a MyPillow and since I got my Giza Dream sheets. I have to tell you, I've slept in some great hotels in my time, but nothing like these Giza Dreams sheets. Now go to MyPillow.com, click on the Giza Dreams sheet special, you'll find out all about them, and use my promo code USA to get 30% off and free shipping. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the Giza Dreams sheet special, use my promo code USA.
South Carolina is looking to ban energy drink sales to minors. This after a 16-year-old boy died in 2017 from heart problems caused by drinking too much caffeine. Now, he had a large Mountain Dew, a latte, and an energy drink, all within 2 hours. ABC News medical correspondent Dr. Jill Ashton on the dangers of energy drinks due to their high caffeine content.
This is the actual study, and it was done over a 13-year period. They looked at three groups of Americans, teens, young adults, that's age 20 to 39, and middle-aged adults. In general, the trend regarding energy drinks up in all those groups, but most in the young adult age range. And so we have to ask, why are they drinking so much? How much are they drinking? And the long-term effects of this in our diet are really still unknown.
And mixing them with alcohol.
Exactly. Not a good thing. So let's go over some of the risks, because we know that these are loaded with caffeine. They're loaded with other stimulants like some amino acids. They are incredibly high in sugar and empty calories. And when you add that to what that's doing to our health, elevating heart rate, elevating blood pressure, increasing the risk for weight gain, which then is tied to type 2 diabetes and, of course, insomnia. So I want to be crystal clear. As a doctor and a nutritionist, once in a while, fine. Every day, multiple times a day, probably not the best for our health. Our body is two-thirds water. It's not two-thirds energy drink.
For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
Thank you.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, Hunterdon Chamber Radio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com. The studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good Morning Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news.